Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning, everyone. The next IQ Squared debate held in New York will be tomorrow night at the Kauffman Center on the question of whether policing is in general racially biased. We'll get a preview now from two panelists in the coming event, former civil rights attorney Gloria Brown Marshall, constitutional law professor at the John Jay College of Criminal Justice, and former police officer Harry Stern, who's a lawyer at a firm called Raines Lucia Stern. They are here to debate the extent of racial bias in policing in advance of their Intelligence Squared forum. Welcome, both of you, to WNYC.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
So the motion is true or false. Policing is racially biased. And I'm going to start in a way that you probably weren't expecting. I'm going to play 1 minute of Attorney General nominee Jeff Sessions. This is breaking news from just moments ago at his confirmation hearing. 1 minute of him addressing this exact question.
In the last several years, law enforcement as a whole has been unfairly maligned and blamed for the unacceptable actions of a few of their bad actors. They believe the political leadership in the country has abandoned them. They felt they have become targets. Morale has suffered. And last year, while under intense public criticism, the number of police officers killed in the line of duty increased by 10% over 2015. And firearms deaths of police officers are up 68%. So this is a wake-up call, colleagues. It cannot continue. If we're to be more effective in dealing with rising crime, we will have to rely and work with more effectively local law enforcement, asking them to lead the way. To do that, they must know they're supported. And if I am so fortunate as to be confirmed as Attorney General, they can be assured they will have my support in their lawful duties.
Senator Jeff Sessions at his confirmation hearing to be Donald Trump's Attorney General just a few minutes ago. So, constitutional law professor at John Jay College of Criminal Justice, Gloria Brown Marshall, do you want to react to that in the context of the debate that you two will be having tomorrow, true or false, policing is racially biased?
Well, we are supportive of the motion that policing is racially biased, and my partner in this debate, Mark Claxton, is a former NYPD police officer who, from the inside out, has seen the racial bias in policing firsthand and is ready, willing, and able to present the argument that not only is it racially biased in that Mr. Sessions is looking at the police in a lionized way in which, as public servants, instead of looking at what the community is asking for, which is, of course, safety, and we want to be protected from those bad apples within the community, but also there's nothing that's been done about the bad apples within the policing community, and that is one of the major issues. He mentions that there are bad apples, that people have done bad things within policing, but then there is no consequence. There is action by police ending in the death of community members, disproportionately people of color, and there is no consequences done with impunity. So racial bias works both ways. It can be against people of color, but can also work in favor of others.
So, Mr. Stern, do you want to make the case that there is not institutional bias? Because I guess that's really the question. When it's framed that this way, everybody would agree that there are some bad apples, as Senator Sessions put it, or a few bad, let's see, his exact words were, law enforcement as a whole has been unfairly maligned and blamed for the unacceptable actions of a few of their bad actors. So I guess you'd agree with him that there isn't institutional racism in policing?
Oh, it's fascinating for me. And just so your audience is clear, I was a cop back in the late 80s and the 90s in Berkeley. a town actually that has quite a bit of crime. For 2 of the years I was there, it had the highest crime rate in the state of California. What I do now is I represent police officers in California accused of misconduct, and I actually have quite a bit of experience representing cops who've been charged with crimes, including federally. So the change that I see is really interesting and striking. During the Obama administration, the Civil Rights Division of the Justice Department was staffed by what I would call ideologues who were almost maniacally focused on persecuting and prosecuting police officers for doing their jobs. The core issue here for me is the idea that a few high-profile, typically video cases, are driving policy. And I think it's always a bad idea to have what I view as the exceptions, the bad apples, if you will, driving policy for a nation and really having a negative effect on public safety for everybody.
What's an example of a policy that's being driven by the reaction to the bad actors?
Well, in California, for example, as of January 1st, we've had legislation mandating that police officers complete stop data for every interaction with the police to try to unearth alleged racial bias in police work. And what you'll see, in, you know, in some ways in the academic sense, you look at something like that and go, it's interesting, maybe we can learn from it. But the not too subtle message to police officers is, we don't want you doing police work. We don't want you stopping African Americans, people of color. Pick on the little old lady driving on Sunday instead.
Professor,
so that's an example of a policy.
Professor Brown Marshall, do you want to react to that?
Well, it's bemusing. You know, if it wasn't so sad, this is a data-driven world in which we live. We use data, especially in a time period in which data is used in corporations, data is used in schools, it's used in government offices. So why not find out, if there's nothing to hide, what the stop and frisk data reveals? I mean, to oppose that and say, just think about how many lines of speculation would be necessary to follow his argument that just because you ask who you're stopping and frisking, that means you want to attack little old ladies in cars. This is what we're dealing with. When, as people in the public paying taxes for everything these officers do, to be maligned because you ask them as citizens of this country to look at what you're doing and how you're doing and how it's affecting particular communities, and you're maligned for that. And I think that's the problem with this issue. There's no discussion, because if a citizen asks the public servant, and that's what officers are, public servants, and I respect officers greatly, and I'll tell you why, because people go into policing to help others. But if something they're doing, say they're doctors, and they go into the medical profession to help others, and they find that there's a better test to find cancer, a better way to do surgery, say, oh, if you ask me about doing this better way, you mean that I'm not doing my job right. You're maligning me. So this defensiveness that we have on the side of police officers, I think is what's undermining our public trust in our public servants.
Want to keep going, Mr. Stein?
Certainly. So the issue isn't that cops in general are afraid of statistics. The problem is, and what we've clearly seen, is that there's no correlation drawn with the other important database universe of statistics, and that's the crime statistics. So typically when we see an analysis of stop data, whether it's Chicago or New York or some of the larger cities in the Bay Area where I do most of my work, we find that there may be a disproportionality between communities of color and the amount of attention they get from the police. The problem is that isn't correlated to crime, where we see a very similar disproportionality skewed the other way in terms of communities of color committing crime. And the tragedy is most of those crimes are committed in their own neighborhood. So really what's happening is the communities themselves are frustrated because the police aren't allowed to do their jobs. So the cops aren't afraid of statistics. They just want them presented and analyzed in a fair and balanced way.
Let me take a phone call from somebody who's going to raise a particular case, and that's Amy in Manhattan. Amy, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hello. Thank you. I think it was Professor Brown Marshall who talked about how our taxes are going to, to fund police, even if they abuse people's rights. I'm going to go beyond that and link it to the Attorney General hearings, and say that that the current Department of Justice found in places like Ferguson and a few others that that police were actually stopped
using the black community as
their actions were used to extract money from African American communities to fund the the cities that they were in.
Right, and Amy, I'm going to leave that there as a question. And Mr. Stern, do you want to take that? What was your reaction to the Ferguson analysis by the DOJ that found they were using the black community as a tax base?
Well, I think if I understand the question, and I can't say that I'm an expert on Ferguson itself. My recollection is that there was work that suggested that the traffic citation revenues were being used to fund the police department. Is that what we're talking about, Brian?
Yeah. I mean, to the motion that you two will be debating tomorrow night in the IQ Square debate, true or false policing is racially biased. That's an example that may have been below the surface in most people's awareness. It wasn't about shooting somebody. It wasn't about prosecuting them differently than white people might be prosecuted for drug offenses or whatever. It was, to a lot of people's eyes, yet another way that there seemed to be a white establishment through the police picking on a black community, which is ticketing them at, very aggressive rates as a revenue generating stream. So does it support the motion?
Well, since I'm against the motion, I'm going to say that it doesn't, and I really think that that's a particular area, a particular strategy, apparently, for obtaining revenue. And my recollection is, once again, I don't know the Ferguson demographics off the top of my head, but it's a majority African-American city, so it wouldn't surprise me if the majority of people being cited are African Americans, because that's who's driving down the street.
Professor Brown Marshall, do you want to respond to the caller at all?
I want to go to, a very particular issue, which is the abuse of the criminal justice system and the abuse of it in a way that's undermined public perception as well as reality. This very issue that the Justice Department found that the black community was being used to finance instrumentalities within the city. And so you find people who are vulnerable. They can't go to the criminal justice system because it's the criminal justice system that is aggressively haunting them at every turn in order to get things from them, put them in the system, have their license taken away, have these different fines against them. But I also want to talk about something at the same time. If the criminal justice system is focused on the black community, that means they're not focused on crimes taking place in the white community. And we rarely talk about white-on-white crime. And statistically, when we talk about statistics, we have to think about this. When a man goes into a theater, kills people, you know, kills a dozen people, injures many others. Statistically, he's only counted as one perpetrator, and yet you have all of these victims. And then multiply that by the fact that white men are the ones in the majority committing mass murders. They're the ones in the majority who are the serial killers, and yet they're only counted as one person in our Bureau of Justice Statistics numbers, and yet that the multitude of the crime goes well beyond that one number. We rarely talk about white-on-white crime. We rarely talk about the heroin epidemic that now is looked upon as a social concern, a medical issue. So when you have these young white people overdosing on heroin, they're seen as people who need counseling. But at the same time, we don't use those same tools in the black community. We have a rampant issue with crystal meth in rural communities. And yet the funding was focused on the urban communities. That's where the cops are going to go, where the funding goes. And these white communities need policing. They need help. And yet the racial bias, as I said, works both ways.
Mr. Stern, I'm going to give you one last response here, and then we're out of time for this preview of your IQ Squared debate at the Kauffman Center tomorrow night, along with other panelists. On that particular question that Professor Brown Marshall just raised, which comes up time and again as evidence of there being institutional bias in law enforcement, the treatment of drug addiction in the urban black community being seen largely as criminal, and the current well-publicized heroin addiction in white suburbs and exurbs and elsewhere being seen as, oh my goodness, we need to help these people. Is that an example of institutional bias?
Well, from my experience, both as an officer and as an advocate, cops go where the squeaky wheel is, and usually drug crimes are treated in a sense by virtue of the attendant violence that they cause. So, you know, as a practical matter, as a cop, if somebody's getting high in their house and watching cartoons and eating Twinkies, it's not a public safety concern. It might not be virtuous behavior, but it's not causing violence and danger and a lack of safety in the community. So the police response for the African-American community has largely been driven by requests, to the point of...
From neighbors, you mean, because there's violence?
Yeah, neighbors, communities, church leaders saying, make our streets safe, push the dope dealers off the corner, make the murder stop. So I don't, you know, and when there's a pullout or a lack of enforcement, usually you get, you know, the exact opposite.
Well, clearly,
clamor,
we are not going
which
to.
Which is, you're not paying attention.
We're not going to resolve it here, and maybe they
we're
won't.
Not.
Maybe they won't resolve it tomorrow night, but it should be interesting when Gloria Brown Marshall, Harry Stern, and other panelists debate in this IQ Squared debate at the Kauffman Center on West 67th Street on the motion, policing is racially biased. Let's see, for tickets or to stream the debate, you can visit intelligencesquaredus.org. Thank you both for the preview. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us. It looks like we've got worthy opponents.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Stay with us.